Tuesday, March 6, 2018. This is The Better Life. I'm your host, Timothy Lawson. This week, we're looking to make luck happen with Vito from Cousin Vito's Casino Podcast. Before we get to him, though, I want to put out a couple of housekeeping notes and touch on a couple gambling things. First, I am in the Maryland area. I live in Northern Virginia, but do most of my gambling in the Maryland casinos. If you are also in this area and enjoy a little dice throwing, let me know. Hit me up on Twitter, at TheBetterLife, and we will see if we can figure out a time to hit up MGM or Maryland Live or even Horseshoe Baltimore and maybe go throw dice one of these days. The Twitter handle is indeed at TheBetterLife, not just BetterLife. Had a saw a couple mistakes out there. Didn't think that was the thing I was going to have to police. Thought the spelling of better might have been the bigger issue, but anyhow, it is at TheBetterLife. Thank you for everybody who has been tweeting about the show, has been promoting it. I truly appreciate it. It's been a nice warm welcome. I couldn't have asked for a better introduction to the gambling podcast space. By the way, I am holding my microphone, and it feels super weird. I'm on travel right now. I forgot my little mic stand that I travel with, and so I'm in fact just holding my microphone, which is super weird. I never hold the microphone when I record my podcasts. So a little tip in gambling or casino promotions, I should say, something that I did wrong. So MGM had a promotion called Cold Hard Cash, and what it was is you gambled and swiped your card Sunday through Thursday, and then on Friday you could go in and be a part of a drawing. So whenever you go in any day, Sunday through Thursday, you could go in as many days as you wanted. But each day you'd go in, you would swipe your card, you'd automatically get one drawing, and then you could play a little game to possibly get more drawings. And then at the end of the week, you'd go in on Friday, swipe your card, and you would immediately, like, it would just instantly put you in a drawing. And each time I only got $5 of free play, I imagine that was the norm. But you could get like up to $10,000, I think, on each Friday. And then the last week, it was the same deal. And the last Friday, the potential prize was up to $100,000. And I went in on that last Friday. I had like 46 entries, which probably wasn't a lot compared to, compared to many patrons over there at MGM. But I went in, I swiped my card, and I logged into the kiosk, and the promotion wasn't there. And I was sort of befuddled. I was like, wait, I have 46 entries. I went to the MLife counter, talked to them. Lo and behold, you had to go in Sunday through Thursday, not only to get your drawings for the week, but to quote unquote activate your drawings for the following Friday. Which is something I probably knew or realized by reading something, but it didn't quite register that even with all of those drawing entries that I had to activate them the previous week. So potentially lost out on a big prize by simply not paying attention to how the rules and how the system works. Really important to do that. So best believe that I am reading every bit of fine print for any promotion that I do. Looking at the MGM National Harbor promotions calendar, I'm actually kind of excited about the next month and a half. They have a Scratch It Rich promotion that's going through the end of May. It's pretty straightforward. You go in any day, you play. I don't know how many slot points, but I think 200 table game or 200 credit tier credits. Playing on a table game gets you an entry or a scratch ticket, and it's a virtual scratch ticket, like a digital one, right? You do it at the kiosk. And, you know, when you scratch it, you get anywhere from, you know, $5 of free play to, you know, game consoles and all this sort of stuff. And that's every day through May 27, which is nice. And I think there's certain days where there's different prizes and there's certain, you know, where there's better prizes. And, you know, and again, it has that fine print of, you know, you must play from this time to this time. And, you know, The They have a kitchen countertop giveaway for each Wednesday in March. You have to get 1,000 to your credit. So it's, I mean, the prizes are nice, but they definitely require table game players to put in some effort at the table. But they got a sandwich maker, a deep fryer, a rice cooker, and if I do these will probably end up as Christmas gifts, as my kitchen probably doesn't need any more of this stuff. But good prizes nonetheless. And the things that I'm actually excited about is they have a spring blackjack series. Two Tuesdays in March, two Tuesdays in April. It's a $50 buy-in with a grand prize of $5,000 cash for each one of them. And then everybody who is at a final table for each of those dates will be at the winner takes all finale on April 10, which I don't see the details on that yet, but I imagine the grand prize is probably larger. And then for each of those, sixth through second place, it gets promotion. I guess a certain amount of promotional chips. What's really nice about these tournaments at MGM National Harbor is the blackjack tournaments and some of the baccarat tournaments take place in the Blossom Cocktail Lounge, which is we see them in every casino, right? They're a little lounge or bar right in the middle. They may or may not have some blackjack tables in it, but it's a little lounge right in the middle of the casino. This one does have blackjack tables in it, and I don't know if this will be the case for this tournament, but the last tournament that I was in at MGM in the in this cocktail lounge, it was open bar to all of the entrants, and it was open bar for any. I think you get any cocktail that was priced at like $16 or $18 or less, which was what was nice about that is their cocktails were priced around $14 to $15 for what you wanted, whether it was a specialty cocktail or even just getting an old fashioned. And the bartenders were really, really good at making these drinks. I mean, these were I was getting old fashions for that day, and I mean, they were some of the best old fashions that I've ever had. So I definitely drank my entry fees worth of old fashions that day. And then they got a baccarat tournament. I have not done a baccarat tournament yet, mostly because their marketing team has definitely misled. Actually, they'll screw up. I'm gonna put the blame on them. In the past, their baccarat tournament promotions has said buy-in starts at the cage at the first of the month for $100. And both times that I've tried to be in this baccarat tournament that they put on, it seems to be every month, I've gone to the cage and they said, nope, we don't have any information on, and this is like a week into the month, right? So it's been a week after they say you can start buying in. I've gone to the cage. They tell me that I can't buy in there, that they don't have information on it. And then I go to the M Life counter, and they tell me, oh, I'm sorry, registration doesn't take place till the day of the tournament. And so there's all sorts of just misleading on there and mispromoting it, or typos, or I don't know what you want to call it, wrong information on their promotions page. So I'm going to try this one again. This says buy-in at the main cage starting March 1st. I'll be going in there probably later this week to go buy in. I'm going to be pretty upset if they tell me that registration happens day of again. And then a couple other promotions going on through the month that I probably won't take place in. But MGM for his this is the property that you'll hear me talking about the most, MGM National Harbor, because it's literally 10 minutes away from me. And for as expensive as their table game play is, they have a good blackjack table. But it's never less than $25 a hand. Their craps tables are $15 if you get there before 11:30. Any other part of the day, it's $25 or $50. But they do have some pretty good promotions, especially when it comes to the gifts. The gifts are pretty solid. And I think you heard me talk about the Valentine's Day gifts that I got for my wife through those promotions. And lastly, what I want to talk about is March Madness, because by the time the next episode comes out, Selection Sunday will have occurred. Selection Sunday is on the 11th, and that is where they select the seeds for the March Madness tournament. And as bettors, there is opportunity before and after Selection Sunday, right? So before Selection Sunday, we can just sort of hypothesize where we think certain teams are going to possibly be. And then after Selection Sunday, we know exactly where they're going to be, right? We know exactly where they're going to be placed inside of the tournament, and you can look at where they are and the value there. So looking at pre-Selection Sunday, what's been really interesting about futures odds in college basketball is it has fluctuated tremendously as teams go on a streak, look really good, and then get beat. And that has happened dozens of times this season. And it feels like it more so than any other season that I've really been paying attention to college basketball. Virginia was at an amazing price for so much of the season as people slept on them. But as we said, as teams were looking great and losing, they slowly crept up the respected ladder and now are at 6.5 to about 6.5 to 1 at the location that I'm looking at. I think I've seen they were as low as 20 to 1 earlier in the season, probably even in deeper. Same thing with Xavier. Xavier now 14 to 1. I got them, I think, at 30 or 35 to 1 earlier in the season. The fluctuating will slow down a little bit, but as you know, as news comes out and as games are still finishing, you know, you'll see this move a little bit. But looking at the pre-Selection Sunday value, if you're in Vegas, always shop around. Always, and by shop around, we mean, you know, look at MGM properties, look at the Caesars properties, look at the CG Technology properties, find the right price. And it's worth doing that because the better price you get, the sharper your bet's going to be, and the more value you're going to get out of it. But the two that I am looking at pre-Selection Sunday, I think West Virginia at 33 to 1. If you pay attention to bracketology, they are currently predicted to be about a 4 seed. And even if they end up a 4 or a 5 seed, right, the teams they're going to play aren't chump, of course. But I think West Virginia is strong enough to be able to get through the 11s, 12s, 13s, and 14s of the world. And that'll help them as they won't have to face the 1s and 2 seeds until later in the tournament. And that's when you're looking at these these deeper shot plays, really you're looking for someone who's going to get deeper into the tournament and has that chance of just of pulling off an upset later. Of course, you know, if we were to assume that maybe Virginia, Villanova, maybe Xavier, and probably Kansas or North Carolina, maybe even Duke sneaks in a 1 seed. Those are probably possible 1 seed teams. Of those, North Carolina's at 22 to 1. I don't know if they'll actually end up with a 1 seed. Xavier, like I said, is 14 to 1, and they're possibly a 1 seed. And, you know, if they end up in the right bracket, that could be a nice shot. They'll probably go down in price if they end up in an easier bracket. The rest of them, Duke, Villanova, Virginia, I think they're too short for any value right now. But if you're in Vegas, if you use the global locations, check those out. Get in anything you think might have value now. And then after Selection Sunday, all of those odds will change accordingly to the predicted strength of those brackets. And the next week I will revisit those. So, and then Gil Alexander, who was on the show earlier in the year, 2 weeks ago, he was episode 1. He's at Beating the Book on Twitter. He hosts a numbers game on the Vegas Stats and Information Network. Each year, he does a segment with Peter Keating at ESPN. They do a segment called Giant Killers, and they break down the the underdogs in the tournament that have the best chance of upsetting in their first round and in future rounds that could be that are strong, and they have their own criteria. I don't think that will have aired before next week's show, so I'll promote that again. But anybody who is in, if you're in a March Madness bracket pool or tournament, or if you like betting on this, that is something to pay attention to. I won my March Madness bracket because I chose accordingly to what they were talking about. And of course, not a lot of people like to choose upsets, or they choose selective upsets. This gives you the best insight into what upsets are more likely to happen. All right, enough of my chit chatter. Let's get into my interview with Vito from Cousin Vito's Casino Podcast. We talk about how he got introduced to gambling, his first gambling endeavors, what he enjoys about the casino, his podcast, and much, much more. I know you're going to love it. Enjoy. Okay, very well. Very well. I can dig that. Cousin Vito of Cousin Vito's Casino Podcast. Sir, thank you so much for joining me.
Oh, thank you for having me on.
Now, before we hit record, you went and fetched yourself a drink. What are you drinking over there?
I'm not ashamed. It's a Dewar's 12-year. I actually went out to a brewery this weekend, and my buddy, we were leaving. He's like, "Oh, let me get a couple of beers." So I didn't really feel like any beers, and I went in, you know, just for a walk. And they had one of those box sets, like the gift boxes. And it was like, I think it was $22. It was something really cheap for the Dewar's 12. And I got a rocks glass. And I got one of those little balls you freeze and you can put in the scotch so you don't melt your ice in there. I mean, I melted the ice in mine today, but.
Yeah, I'm not a big scotch guy myself, but my wife and I went to Scotland last year. And we went to the McCallan Estate. And came home with a 15-year Macallan. So we use that as sort of our victory lap of sorts when we have something really to celebrate. We pour ourselves
I thought you were going to say we've been using it as paint thinner. it works as that too, actually.
Very well. I'll stick the normal paint thinner for that. I don't want to waste the Macallan. So Cousin Vito, I decided to do a podcast inside the gambling space, and one of the things that drew me to it was how great the community seemed to be. Everybody, like, you know, interacts with each other online. They mention each other's shows, and I thought that was a really cool community to be a part of. And I'm reaching a time of my life where I'm more comfortable with the fact that I'm a recreational gambler, in the sense that I never really had friends that also did it. Like, it was just sort of like my own hobby. And so I was like, hey, I'm going to get into this community and just be a little bit more a part of it and embrace this part of my life. And one of the things I wanted to do in this launch was sort of pay back to some of these shows that I started listening to before doing this. And that includes Cousin Vito's Casino Podcast.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
As, 5 or 6 years ago, when I got into sports betting, I was like, there's got to be a podcast on sports betting. So I looked it up, sure enough, found a bunch of them, and I've been listening to those for years. And I did the same thing with recreational gambling. I was just less than a year ago, I was like, you know what? There's got to be podcasts on people that just like going to casinos. And sure enough, and ones that weren't even just necessarily Vegas specific. And sure enough, that's how I ran into to your podcast. You can bet on that, Tipping the Odds, stuff like that. So a lot of great content out there. Glad to have you on. Vito, we're going to start with the one thing that we all have in common, right? And that's being a gambler. And we were all introduced to this at some point in our lives. What is your earliest recollection in being introduced to the concept of gambling? What was your first exposure to that?
I'm going to have to say, can I do two stories here? Cause I have two.
Sure.
My memory I always remember was going to Atlantic City as a kid with my grandfather and my mother, because I didn't grow up with a lot of expendable income as a kid. I was more of a lower class Italian American family, money wise. But Atlantic City was a trip that we would always go on. And my grandfather, he was the one. That was really the only vacations I ever went on. I didn't go to Disney World till I was in my 20s. I didn't go on a plane till I was in my 20s. I used to take the train to Atlantic City for all my vacations. So my love of casinos was there. But I was looking through my old books as a kid. Like, you know, you make a kindergarten book, you write a couple lines in it, and you write a first grade book, and you have all these stuff stored in a box somewhere. I went in the box, and I noticed on one of my pages it said, "My dad yells at the football because he likes betting on the football games when I was a little kid." I'm not even kidding you. And then it brought back these memories because he was like, "What are you putting that in the book for?" You know, because he was, you know, maybe it's an Italian thing or a Northeast thing, or it's probably actually an everywhere thing because it seems like every newspaper has the spreads. But I grew up around it, you know, as a little kid, everywhere it seemed like, between the lottery and between, you know, football. But Atlantic City is, you know, a big, long, roundabout way to say it. I would say going to Atlantic City as a kid started my love, not just for gambling, but for casinos.
Yeah, very cool. That's so great, the kindergarten book.
Oh, my God.
I would laugh so hard if my kid – I would laugh and be like, well, I bet this is coming up in the next PTA meeting. So what's do you remember then your earliest wager that you remember placing? Something that's independent of the story you just told us. So whether that's, you know, playing poker or, you know, or you actually your first casino visit as a gambler. What's your earliest memory of actually betting yourself?
My first memory, like, I'm sure as a kid I've bet, you know, you bet baseball cards or something. I'm sure I did little things here and there because it was kind of pumping through the blood. And I mean, my first memory of playing casino games would be probably grade school. I mean, it's going to sound weird in 2018 to say that my grandfather had the roulette felt and had the roulette table. But back then it was only Vegas and Atlantic City. So he would have had the roulette table at his house, and we would play as kids. He would practice. He always liked spinning the ball. He kind of was into the clocking the dealer or wheel bias, so he would always be, like, running trials and doing stuff like that. But we didn't really wager. You know, that was more fun. For wagering, I actually – and when I was 17, I went to Atlantic City, and my cousin Mikey was there. He was 20. And before we went on the trip, we were like, we're going to try and gamble. And why everyone was okay with it. We went on the trip, so we dressed up in suits, and we were like, let's go down to the casino floor. I believe we were at either the Hilton or the Showboat in Atlantic City on the boardwalk. And we were able to get down at our own hotel. We played some quarter double diamond machines. I can't remember if it was a $1.25 bet or a 75 cent bet at the time. But I knew to play max because that's my family was like, make sure you play the max. But then at the time, I guess if I won, they would have never gave it to me because I was 17 years old. But we ended up winning at our own hotel. So we were able to go up and down the boardwalk, and we walked away winners. Me and my cousin Mike, I'm pretty sure this was both our first times playing slot machines. And we won and got dinner on our winnings as minors. So hopefully the statute of limitations on that is up.
That's a good story. I like that. What's your game of choice now then, and what's your style? What's your approach to playing it?
Ooh, let's see. Oh, man. See, I know you want a direct answer, but I love so much. I kind of have to touch on a bunch of things, I think.
All right, that's fine. You don't have to represent one game. Let's go through them all. What's like when you first get into the casino, what games are you scoping first?
When I go now, it really depends on who I'm with. So if I'm with my wife, or I go a lot with my mother, or, and I don't really go with my grandmother, but mostly my mother, my wife, my sister, peers like that that aren't going to play a table game with me. I like the tag team slot play. And this is how we always play it, where we'll all put the same amount of money into a machine, whether it's $20 a piece, you know, $40 a piece, however what we want to do. And what we'll do is we'll take turns hitting the button. And if you win half your bet back or more, you keep on going. And if you lose everything, we keep going around the circle. We do that. I do that to this day with my mother and my wife. We'll go on a Sunday morning and we'll say, all right, even my cousin Mikey now, we've got him into the slots. We'll each throw in $20 or $40 and say, all right, let's go into the high limit room. We'll walk around, see if you got a vibe. We'll try here. And then, you know, one bonus round, you double up, you get out of there, and then I'll meander into my other games. But tag team slot play is a great opener for non-table game players. I love doing that.
Okay. And then I'm assuming if you're with cousin Mikey, you guys are throwing dice.
Oh, yeah. We love that. Our number one now is the dice. I've been going a little off the dice sometimes when I'm alone, but Mikey is a huge craps guy. Craps is my number one by far. I should have opened with that because, you know, I wanted to save the best for last, I guess. But craps is my favorite. The excitement, the high highs, and the low. The thing about the craps table is you have these low lows, but a lot of times you guys are all on the sinking ship together. So there's something to be said about when you're with people and you have the camaraderie of you're all on this ship. You know, it's like the guys in the Titanic, you weren't fighting with, you know, you were, the band was playing. We're the band that keeps playing on the Titanic together, you know?
Yeah. What's your, what's your style of playing on craps?
My style, I'm pretty conservative because I, as a recreational gambler, I use only my expendable income. So something I might spend on buying a new TV or buying nice clothes too, I guess. My wife wants me to spend more on my some new shoes, but mostly I go with just my little bit of money. I'll play for craps. I'll play obviously pass line. I'm gonna take odds. Depending at the casinos around, I could do 5 or 10 times odds. Often I'll start with 3 times odds and start upping it a little bit if things start going in the right direction. And not to drag on about that, but coupled with that, not that I use the 3-point Molly system, but in general, a 3-point Molly, which would be my pass line bet and then 2 come bets with odds.
Yeah.
So I'll generally start with that. And if maybe a comeback comes back, I'll plop the profit onto my odds, my pass line. So if a big wave's coming, I'm ready with my surfboard. You know, where if no wave's coming, I'm not swimming out too far and getting stranded out there, hopefully. I'm going to know that it's going to take a long time to crack me and hopefully a short time to get a little bit of a windfall and be able to say, all right, let's put my winnings to the side. And now I'm going to play with, you know, my profits here.
Yeah. If I go by myself, I'm usually a don't better.
But, I'm okay with the don't better. I don't want to give the wrong impression. I am okay.
Let me qualify myself saying I'm a good don't better. I don't make a peep when I win. I just sit there with my bet on the don't pass line and I just wait. And then there's a lot of excitement inside of me when I see a 7 and there's no excitement across the table. What I like about it is if my bankroll's right, I will play a continuous don't, right? So the don't pass with the don't come with odds. And what I like about that is when things aren't going – so when the table's winning, it's still even a really slow burn for the don't bettors. And it's you can really drag out your money a little bit more that way, I've learned, which is nice, which is really all what we're trying to do, right, is have more time at the table. Go ahead.
Go ahead. I was just going to say the thing about the don't, because I played the don't a little bit, you know what I mean? Because when you get into craps, you're like, oh, let me learn all the bets. Then you learn about the don't bet. My only reservation when I play the don't, and it doesn't matter if I'm playing with people or against people or however it's working, I don't know what it is. It's laying the odds versus placing the odds. Now, I realize laying them, you know, you're going to win them much more than placing your odds behind your pass line. But for me, I love the excitement of holding on to that hot roll and saying, you know what, the odds of me with my little bet, you know, because I don't do a big, you know, I'm not doing 10 times odds every time, but I love realizing that big windfall or if you get something great going on, where when I was in the don't, you'd have those wins, but I like slapping 5 too. I think I'm looking for approval from everybody. I think that's, you know what I mean? I think that's sure. It too, is I like people rooting for me and being like, yeah, we did it.
Yeah. So if people can't find you playing softs with your family or throwing dice with cousin Mikey, what are you doing?
I've been getting into the Pai-Gao poker lately, to be honest with you. I played years ago before I even was a gambler. This is going to sound like I'm really old. I'm not even that old. When computers first came out. So I don't know if it was Windows. So it wasn't when they first came out, but we're talking like early 90s, Windows, sure. Whatever, 95 or – so one of the computers I had was packaged with a little poker thing, and it had Pai-Gao Poker as one of the free games. So I always played against a computer, but it wasn't really a wagering type of thing. It was like kept track. It was like a score or kept track of wins versus losses, you know, but it wasn't like I had fake chips. So I always kind of knew how to play it. But then I started listening to You Can Bet on That, and Mark Duvall, he is a big fan of it. And then I started, as I've been doing the gambling podcast, it's come up a lot. The Wizard of Odds likes Pai-Gao. A lot of, you know, people that I respect and enjoy talking to and listening to all liked it. So it made me say, you know what? I got to sit down and play this. And I actually lucked out. This is actually a little bit of a plug for, I don't know if you must have heard about Zorkfest that we, the event in Atlantic City. Well, this is, by the time this releases, the announcement will have been made. Zorkfest 2 is going to Las Vegas. So my at the first Zork Fest, when I arrived, one of the speakers, Eric Rosenthal, he does the Total Rewards. He did the Total Rewards program class and all that. So he talks about the casino rewards. And he had a PyGow table set up for us. And there were, you know, the open spot for me. He said, hey, come on, play PyGow. And this was the first time I've actually played in the casino for money. Because I know, you know, it's not a social game, you know, no one else really plays with me. So I even said, let me go find, you know, go far off to the, I mean, it sounds Asian lounge. I mean, I that's what I call them. I think they're even called the Asian lounge at some of the casinos. But the PyGow is normally located, you know, it's not next to the craps table. So you kind of got to look for it. And I'm telling you, I sat down at this PyGow table and I had so much fun. And this is coming from a low roller. I was betting $25 a hand. Which is, I would never do that in blackjack, you know, unless some sort of serious windfall happened prior. And I was very skeptical, saying $25 a hand. All right, I'm going to buy him a $200. So, you know, I got eight hands. Worst case, you know, it's like a craps loss, and I'll just chalk it up to like, all right, we had a bad gambling session here. And I played for so long on my $200 because there's so many pushes.
Yeah.
And, you know, the house edge is, even though you're paying it back on the commission bet, the game moves so slow, and the atmosphere at the table is nice because unlike blackjack, where you are really affecting everything around you. So if you take a bad hit or do something that's not basic strategy, you could get looks. People might heckle you, you know, and you're like, hey, what's, you know, you might get in trouble. You don't even realize it. But at the PyGow table, what I do makes no difference to anybody. It makes no difference to the dealer. So I can ask the other players, hey, what should I do here? What do you think? Hey, dealer, what would you guys do? And they'll help you. And, you know, it's a very a nice vibe and a slow drain, which is nice also.
Yeah, I like that. And I wonder, I'm curious, did Eric or anybody there, did they talk about how the house rates PyGow play because there's so many pushes? Is it a good game to play for?
Poorly, no, poorly. Yeah. You're not really playing for the comps, even though I will say, because after Zorkfest, I've been playing at my local casino a little bit. I'm not getting a great rating, but because I'm at a $25 table, standing next to a $5 craps table rating, yeah. It's not, I'm not saying, oh, poo, this is nothing to me, you know, as somebody who, because a lot of players, they play big, so they won't even use their card when they play like a little tiny bit, you know, because it's like, ah, what's the point? I'm playing for $200. Normally I'm playing for $2,000.
Yeah.
Where for me, I try and milk every sort of reward dollar I can mostly. You know, rarely am I like, nah, I'm not going to use my card. I'm like, you know what? If this could get me a free coffee to lick my wounds with, it's worth it for me. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. I suppose PyGow would be a really good game for is in your area, are drinks complimentary, alcoholic drinks?
Yes, yes. Yeah. And honestly, up until I went to the Horseshoe Baltimore, because I've heard of these casinos that charge for drinks. You know that sounds crazy, but
Maryland is exactly the state that does that. Yep.
Oh, and I was surprised. I mean, I actually could tell you a funny story about that when I got the drink. But I went to, you know, I grew up going to Atlantic City, and you know, drinks were free. I've gone to Vegas, read about Vegas, drinks are free. And for me, my local casino, Mohegan Sun and Foxwoods, they were two of the early tribal casinos, mm-hmm. So their drinks were always free, and their craps were always dice craps. So I never even realized about a lot of these different regulations and different things until just before starting the podcast, where I was doing research on different things. And I was like, oh my God, I guess I know a lot less than I thought, because I didn't even, you know, realize things were like this. I thought we all had the luxury of the free drinks. It almost makes me, I mean, I don't know if I would have, without the free rooms and the free drinks, I don't know if I could stand losing the money at the casino, to be honest with you.
Yeah. What's so between Foxwoods and Mohegan Sun, which of those two casinos do you prefer?
Ah, oh, man, another long answer I got for you. I'm going to say it's a toss up. Mohegan Sun is more, I don't want to say smaller because it's very big also, but Mohegan Sun is basically, picture it's like two big circular casinos where you have the casino floor in the middle, you have slots, table games, all in that middle area, and then the outside you have extraneous, you know, gathering areas, maybe some more smaller gaming floors, eating areas, stuff like that. And there's two big, I mean, so basically Mohegan's almost as if it's two smaller regular casinos connected in the middle with all this beautiful architecture. So Mohegan's great for a Sunday trip if you're going with your family. It's small. You can find each other easier. You don't have to walk very far to get to all the different tables. Where Foxwoods is large, and it was built architecturally just differently, because they had their original Pequot Tower and their Great Cedar Tower, which are very similar in design. It's not the wheels formation like Foxwoods. It's, you know, you feel like you're in different little casinos when you're in the different rooms.
Gotcha.
And then they added the MGM, which is now the Fox Tower, and that's its own freestanding, you know, 20, 30 floor casino tower with its own gaming floor at the bottom, which is wide open, high ceilings, a very modern feel. So Foxwoods, if you're going, if you were flying in with your girlfriend or wife or something, I would say stay at Foxwoods. You'll get a better room rate. There's more to do in the sense that there's the outlet stores. It's a larger gaming floor. It'll take you longer time to see the whole casino. Well, but if you're going to party, you know, Mohegan Sun, you're going to be able to find everybody.
Well, I will be going to Foxwoods, I believe, for a little event that that you're helping put on called Gamblepalooza.
Oh, beautiful. All right. Oh, yeah. Perfect. So, yeah, I'll give you the grand tour.
Yeah. Tell me. So this is one of the things that fascinated me, and I don't know how long this has been going on, but something that fascinated me about this community of gambling and Vegas podcasters is the group outings to Vegas and now the Gamblepalooza in Massachusetts, and I've heard ones in Southern California, stuff like that. Tell me, like, has this been going on for long, or where you know, the community puts on these little weekend events and everybody just shows up and gambles together?
Honestly, I'm fairly new, because what happened was I listened to You Can Bet on That.
Right.
Because I was a recreational gambler. I mean, I liked Vegas, but I didn't like how you looked for the different podcasts and you're like, you know, what about recreational gambling? I'm looking at sports betting. I didn't look into Vegas. I didn't even type Vegas. I typed gambling and gambling is what came up. So I listened to them, and then I started listening to 360 Vegas, Vital Vegas. And this was maybe the summer or a couple months before I started doing my podcast, was I was listening to these. You know, I had a different type of job where I could actually listen to the podcasts all day. So that was great. I miss that. I'll tell you that much. Yeah. I miss listening to the podcasts all day. But they were very open to me, because I would ask a couple questions to some of them, you know, say hello. I actually started before I even thought about doing a podcast. I would call in to You Can Bet on That on their voicemail line. So that's kind of was like my first introduction to that. Oh, they kind of want to, these people actually don't ignore you. They want to kind of talk about gambling and get to know you a little bit.
Yeah.
And then as it moved forward, actually, this was an interesting moment. I went to the 360 Vegas vacation, and you know, I talked about it on my show. I had Tony on, but for me, I was on my first, I mean, it's first 30, 40 episodes, and I'm still new. I mean, to me, I still feel new to it at episode 70 something, but I was going as a fan of 360 Vegas, and I wanted to meet the You Can Bet on That guys. And when I ended up going, I ended up meeting everybody. And then I was like, let me go to the meet and greet to meet everyone. And when I got there, what happened was then all of a sudden people started saying, hey, wait a minute, are you Cousin Vito? Is that because, hey, I think this is Cousin Vito over here. And people, because I wasn't, you know, advertising I was going, but people, I didn't realize the people that listen to the podcast, everybody really does come together. And after the meet and greet, Mark from 360 Vegas, he pulled me aside and said, hey, man, he's like, I just want you to know that we have another meet and greet, and it seems like you're part of this meet and greet now, because everyone's here. You know, everyone seems to know who you are anyway. So I would love for you to come down, because I didn't, you know, commit to any of the other meet and greets. And he was like, you know, I'd love you to come to the one we have going on the next day, and say hello to everybody, because you seem pretty popular. and then I'm sucked in, and now it's like I'm in the community, and everyone's so nice. It's hard, you know. It's like I don't know if it was Tony or Michael Traeger said this on my show, and you're meeting like-minded people, and we all have our own lives where we go through and do our, you know, 9-to-5 jobs. And some of us are lucky enough to have a job that is in our dream field, but the majority of us are, you know, 9-to-5. We're just trying to keep the lights on, do something that isn't torture. And, you know, all these people coming together, it's like you could live. You get to live your dream almost. Of I found all these friends, and we all have the same thing in common, have the same passions in life.
Yeah, that's cool. I like that. Excited about Gamblepalooza, by the way. I have not been to that part of the country, and I have never other. The only time I've ever played craps with someone that I know, like with friends, is when my friends, one of my friends was in Vegas with me. He didn't really want to play, so I was playing craps while he was tipping the waitress who kept on bringing us drinks. And that's actually the closest that I've ever gotten to like playing craps with like friends, with people that I know. And that's actually the biggest attraction that I have to and of course meeting people in the community. But I'm just excited to play craps with people that I'm familiar with. That's a new concept to me.
Did I give you the host information for Gamblepalooza yet?
I believe you did. And I can't remember if I sent him something or if I drafted it or what.
Oh, send it over, because we're trying to get the strength in numbers. And I want to get us all a reserve craps table, at least part of it, so we could all go down together and say, all right, we got a table. This is the Gamblepalooza table we're starting with. And yeah, have a whole – because I've had the half a table, I know everybody. But to have that whole table, I feel like it'd be nice to be shooting down to your friends on the other end, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And, after we get done with this interview, I will make sure that I have an email sent to that
guy. I'm giving you homework.
Where'd it go? I checked my sent, and I pulled off the there we go. Where's your favorite place to play? And just anywhere in the world. What's like here? If you could just like get in your car and just magically be at a casino that you really like playing in, where would that be?
Oh man, this is going to be a plain Jane answer, but to me, because my problem is when I go to Vegas, I don't go that often. You know, I've been there a handful of times in my life because I don't love Vegas, but I'm a gambler. Yeah. So to me, a lot of times when I'm weighing going to Vegas, I say, you know what? Once you put the trip together and you're looking at the price tag for all the stuff you're doing, a lot of times I say, if I went to my local casino, I could have room. I have free rooms anyway. You know, I could play. So for me, I love the Mohegan Sun and Foxwoods. I mean, overall, I've been going to Mohegan lately and I love Mohegan. But the casino that I've stayed at most is probably Foxwoods. I've stayed there. I mean, I don't want to exaggerate, but it had to be between 50 to 100 nights of my life. I've actually spent there, and I love it. I love both of them. My local casinos, I would say. Just, I mean, I guess magically, I would, you know, maybe on an island somewhere. Maybe, you know, I don't know. In Aruba, I played craps in Aruba, and I had a blast down there playing craps. I'm trying to think. I might have been only double odds was the only problem, but. You know, Aruba wasn't bad either. Yeah, basically anywhere, I guess. Anywhere I'll play.
That's going to be my next question was, have you played anywhere unique? Like any global locations? It sounds like you played in Aruba. Anywhere else?
Yeah, Aruba. I mean, nothing really that crazy. The reason why gambling was a great hobby for me is because it was so close with Mohegan Sun. And even as a child, you know, Atlantic City was a family vacation spot. So for me, it was a lot about convenience. Like even now, when I go to the casino, I'm not saying, hey, guys, Friday night, let's get in the car and go, because I would rather have an empty table. You know what I mean? I'd rather have – not an empty table. I'd rather have a table where I'm comfortably getting on this table. You know, maybe we got 10 people at it, but I don't need, you know, to be waiting in line to get to the craps table, where a lot of times, you know, Friday night, especially at Mohegan or Foxwoods around here, especially Mohegan, you know, I went on a Sunday. It was a holiday Sunday. I had to wait like 2 hours before they opened up a craps table that I didn't have to horn in on and like say, is there a spot and squeeze in? you know, so maybe that's my favorite casino. One that's moderately filled and the drinks come fast. So wherever that is, they could send me an invite. CousinVito@gmail.com, because I'll go.
I'm right there with you. There's nothing more awkward than like getting up to a casino or getting up to a craps table and being like, is this spot open? And someone glares at you. Yeah, but he's shooting. I mean, like that's the shit. They're like as if you possibly just ruined everything for everybody by asking if there's room next to the person who's currently shooting.
And they'll blame you. You're like better 9 to 7, or they'll say, "Hey, this guy. Until he walked up, there was no 7 here. Clearly, he's the only variable."
I find it so obnoxious that I almost like want to step back, and be like, "Well, I hope you don't roll a 7," and then just walk.
God! Oh, I'd be like, "Bye, like a son of a." He's a don't. Oh, classic don't player. Let's put it that way. He's a classic don't.
Yeah, see, I'm setting myself up to be bad luck at Gamopalooza, aren't
Yeah,
I?
I don't even. I'm not that. I mean, this is so ridiculous, but I rarely even say seven at the table. Like I'll have my wife and me, because a lot of times what I'll do is when you have a nice room, my wife will come. I'll bet. We'll go around. Let her do a pass line. She'll shoot. You know, that social aspect.
Yeah.
And even when I explain to her, and I'll be like, look, right now we get the cum bets out. I'll be like, a five we win, a six we win, an eight we win, but the number between six and eight, we lose everything. So we
Yeah.
don't want that number. But, you know, I won't even, just because I'm ridiculous. I mean, basically, I kind of like adding fuel to the superstition fire in a way. That's kind of the fun of it. You know, like the wearing the game day sports jersey. It's kind of that same. It's akin to that.
Yeah. I don't believe, or I don't really buy into any of the superstitions, but I respect everybody's superstition, right? So I don't want to, you know, if someone, so yeah, I'm the same. I don't say seven to table because I know everybody hates that. I'm aware that like the dice don't hear me, they're not gonna turn up. But I still like to respect it. There was a new player at one of my tables, and he was right next to me, and he was sort of like trying to. And he was just following my lead, and so naturally he was on the don't, and a seven came, and I leaned in real quick, and I was like, don't cheer, don't clap, don't be excited. I was like, everybody else just lost, we won, just take it. And he was like, okay. Do you have a favorite gambling or casino or Vegas-themed movie or TV series?
Movie or TV series? That's tough. I mean, for me, obviously, not obviously, but for me, obviously, it's National Lampoon's Vegas Vacation comes to mind when you say Vegas, because I'm thinking the reason why that one holds close to my heart is because it gives you the gamut of everything that can happen. You know, you get the wildest dreams of the casino winnings and you get the lowest lows. You know, I like to refer to it as you have to learn how to enjoy the thrill of victory. And you have to be able to enjoy the agony of defeat in a way, you know, and realize that majority of the time you're going to hopefully not lose all at all. But the majority of the time you're going to struggle at craps or struggle at any casino game. So if you can't and still have fun and take back and say, you know what, we still had a great time. We didn't lose our whole life savings here. And you know what? We could have went out to a dinner somewhere or went to a movie or a show and spent $200, $300 for tickets and hotel. You know what I mean? Where it's like, to me, I you know, I even forgot what the hell the question was. I said, oh, favorite movie. Yeah. And actually on my show, I did my favorite gambling TV show moment or anything ever was on. I wish I had the episode here for you, but it was on an episode of Mr. Belvedere. And I covered it on my show. I did a gambling on television segment, and it's an Atlantic City centric show. So basically the premise was, one of the daughters on the show, the protagonists, you know, Mr. Belvedere is the butler. So they are the daughter's volunteering at an old folks home. And I'm sure there's a politically correct way to say that too, but you know, an old folks home. And they brought, the guy was like, I want to go to Atlantic City, this crotchety old man. And he's like, well, you want to come with me? Let's get out of this place. So they're like, all right, we'll go. As you know, young kids, they're like, let's go. So he takes him to Atlantic City. And you know, I'm going to give away the episode because I don't think you're watching Mr. Belvedere. I don't even think it's
Go ahead.
I don't think it's on Netflix. So anyway, they play craps. They play all these games. He gets the hotel room. They're all dressed up. And, you know, there's all sorts of other high drinks involving Mr. Belvedere. But basically, he ends up going on the boardwalk, watching the sunrise. And he says, oh, go get some soft water taffy or some sort of boardwalk food for him. And he passes away. And it's going to sound weird, but I'm telling you, I watch this episode and I always get choked up because, you know, obviously inevitable. We're all growing older. So we're all – that's part of the reason gambling, I think, is popular, is because it's like – it's kind of like throwing caution to the wind a little bit, where it's like you live once, maybe something good will happen. If not, I'll sustain the loss. But watching this episode progress from this crotchety old man, and then he's at this high where he's this nice old man enjoying himself, playing all these games, making jokes, you know, having cocktails – and then at the end, he passes, and they find him on the boardwalk. And, you know, it's kind of a cheesy sitcom, so it's not like, you know, Shawshank Redemption here if you seek it out. But it always, even as a kid watching it, for some reason that episode stood out to me. And then years later, I was able to DVR it, and, you know, it was on every day. And I was like, oh, my God, look, there's this Atlantic City episode. I think I remember that. And I watched it as an adult for the first time. And, you know, it just tugged at my heartstrings so much because, you know, it's very gambling centric because it's the whole premise of this old man story, but it's also a little bit, you know, it's a little big picture about, like, you know, it's for the love of gambling in a way.
Yeah, absolutely. Last couple of questions, Vito, I want to be mindful of your time. Tell me, can you share an experience and share with whatever you're comfortable with sharing, but do you have an experience either for yourself or some, or you witnessing another person that maybe gambled without any discipline, maybe gambled a little over their head, maybe got a little out of control. Do you have a moment like that you can share?
Yeah, you know what? I have a good one I could share.
Okay.
I'll share two small ones with you. One of them's involving me, which isn't a big one, and one of them's involving a stranger that always stuck out to me. So for me, I've luckily could, you know what's weird? It's almost like when you grow up around gambling, or even me, like as an Italian American, and a lot of other cultures have alcohol in their culture, where like we always drink wine. People were always drinking wine growing up, you know? So as a kid, alcohol wasn't like this big taboo to me. Like I could have a little sip of wine here and there, or you know what I mean? And when people would drink around me, you know, they weren't smashing wine bottles over each other's head. It was a social thing.
Yeah.
So for me, gambling, I've never had a point where, other than this one time, which I'm going to talk about in one second, I never really had any big losses where I was very devastated, or I was like, what am I going to do? Oh, my God, how am I going to pay this? You know, I've always grew up saying, you know what, I'll play with what I have. I'm not going to play with anything I don't have because, you know what, I don't have any time for any other problems in my life, you know? So for me, I went to the casino. I was staying at Foxwoods, actually, for like a 3 or 4 night trip. It was a longer trip. And it was late one night. I was down. And I was like, you know, let me put in a – I'm going to go to the ATM. And I never go to the ATM. That's one of my policies also is I bring – you know, I'll bring cash, but I'm never going to the ATM, rarely. And this night I went to the ATM and I was alone. So, what, you know, if I lose it socially, sometimes I could say, you know, I'm chalking up to having fun. But I was alone. My girlfriend at the time went to bed. I had a couple cocktails and I took out whatever the limit was in the ATM. Must have been four, you know, nothing thousands. It was like $400 or $500 or something. You know what I mean? And watching that money run through my fingers that night from like midnight to sunrise, I was going to bed that night and I was like, you know what? Never again. That was my wake up moment. And, you know, this is a decade ago now. And, you know, I'm sure to most people they're saying, you know, $500, puh, that's nothing. But, you know, it's all relative.
Yeah.
So that was when I learned that I don't like that. I don't like that feeling, and I won't be able to enjoy the casino if I have that feeling very much more. So that helped me, was learning by my mistake. But more recently, I was at a craps table at Foxwoods again. So this is very Foxwoods centric, Gamblepalooza centric actually. So I was at a Foxwoods table. It was me and one other guy, and I'm telling you, I should have did the math out. But I forget what it is when I was at a $10 table, but this guy was doing, like, I want to say he was doing 100 or 200. He was doing it was 1100 something across. I forget exactly what he was doing because the points change, you know, but he was doing over 1000 across, right? And I'm telling you, man, I watched this guy blow through like $5,000. And I'm not kidding you. It was only me and him at the table. So he was rolling 7 and out. I was rolling 7 and out, back and forth. And I watched him rip through between $3,000 and $5,000. And you know, I'm sitting here with $300 to $500, and I'm like, you know, like, look at my little crumbs I'm holding together. And this guy ripped through so much, and he didn't look like a wealthy, you know, obviously it's a stereotypical to say he doesn't look like a wealthy guy, but he didn't look like a millionaire oil tycoon is basically what I'm saying. He looked like a guy like me. And to see somebody blow through, you know, $5,000, it makes you say, either I got to get into the line of work he's going into, or he's going to be, you know, he's going to be laying on the pillow tonight, really clinching, you know, holding back tears.
Yeah.
So I'm sure that's, you know, a relative story, because a doctor would be like, 5,000, you know, let me go get in my BMW and get out of here, you loser. but to me, I was like, I feel for this guy, because I wouldn't even put 10, you know, across with my $10 piddly bets, you know, never mind with thousands of dollars. So yeah, that was a hurtful. Watching his loss, it was more painful than watching my own loss, because at least I could rationalize it.
I was at MGM National Harbor, and I was at the craps table, and a guy walks up, right? I think the point had just been established. He walks up, he throws his money down, he gets his chips, he throws them all across 7 out. Like, and I'm just like, and I looked, and you know, who knows? Maybe a thousand may not have been what he walked in. Maybe there was more in his pocket, and he just didn't want to play anymore. He was going, but it was like I was standing there. I was like, that. I wonder what that feels like to someone to either, you know, on both sides. Was it to someone where that mattered, where that money matters, or where that money doesn't matter? I'm always curious of what that feels like. Last question, Vito. Going to play a little game called Bet Your Life on it. I'm going to give you two events. You're going to choose which one you think is going to happen first. If you're right, you get an entire second lifetime. So when you pass away, you're just reincarnated into a second life. If you're wrong, you die as soon as the event occurs. Of course, this is all hypothetical, cousin. Don't worry about me like hunting.
God. So there's a right or wrong answer to these questions. So there is a chance I look like an idiot. A chance I'm going to look like an idiot here.
Well, only if people live out to see these events. And you'll understand what I'm saying. Which one of these events do you think will happen first? Will the Browns win a Super Bowl, or will a third party candidate win the presidential election? Which of those events do you think will happen first?
Wow, that's a very good question. Oh my God. Now I'm thinking about how bad my interview questions are on my show. that's a thought provoking one.
Thank you.
Third party candidate. Well, I'm gonna go. It's tough because our up until this past election, I would have probably gone with the Browns because I'm gonna go. There's too much money in politics for a third party candidate to even get on a debate stage. That's the big problem. So actually, disclosure, I actually have a bachelor's of science in political science. So I'm very into politics as like a side, not obsession, but a side hobby. So for me, I would say just because it's every 4 years, a candidate has to run. And I don't see it happening next election because there's going to be so much blowback. It's going to be a very I'm assuming it'll be a very bipartisan election just because of the way the politics have been playing out thus far in President Trump's term. I'm going to say the Browns have a lot more chance because football, there's a lot of parity. Hey, you know what? You get a good quarterback, things come together. You could be in the playoffs. You never know what could happen. I mean, look, the Jaguars almost, the Eagles won a Super Bowl this year. I mean, come on. I'm going to go with the Browns.
All right, very well. That's 3 for 3 so far, and people taking the Browns. But what is funny is there's thought, right? You have to think about it. You're like, I don't know, the Browns are pretty bad. And when they continue to bring back Hugh Jackson, you wonder how long until they'll decide to make right decisions in that front office.
This is going to be a little against the grain here, but I don't hate Hugh. To me, with Hugh Jackson, he's going to he was there. I mean, not to get into a football conversation here, but the Browns, you know, you have a perennial losing culture and he hasn't won a lot of games. But in the sense, his coaching has really built the Browns because they've been throwing quarterbacks. I mean, it's, you know, the theory of throwing crap at the wall till something sticks.
Yeah.
That's kind of been – he hasn't gone in there and picked his guy or did this. They still got the Josh Gordon thing. They have their running backs are a little moose-shod. They've added pieces defensively. But to me, they're a team that when they turn the corner, it's going to surprise people. It'll be almost like a Jaguars this year in a sense where they put a lot into the – little not a lot. They traded Joe Hayden away, got rid of him. But they're putting draft picks into their defense. And once Hugh Jackson gets his guy in there and, you know, you could start – I mean, they've drafted a lot of receivers, but I have hope for the Browns. That might be the stupidest thing you've ever heard. Actually, can I take that back? I don't want to say that, but I feel like they might have success with Hugh Jackson is what I'm trying to say.
Okay, very well. All right, the logic is there, and I think I agree. I think I lean Browns in that scenario as well. But don't worry, if a third party candidate does get elected, it will not be calling you and hunting you down, saying you need to pay up your wager. So,
well, you know, I would have probably voted for him, so I'll be celebrating either way. You know, I mean, they'll be like the Terminator. I'll be like, cousin Vito. I'll be like, no, finally a third party one. Oh God,
that's it'll be poetic in some ways. Casino. Cousin Vito's Casino podcast available. I'm sure we're everywhere. Podcasts are available. I listen to it on my own iPhone, so I can only assume that it's available everywhere. You just released your at the time that people are listening to this, you're around episode 74, 75, maybe something like that. Very well known in the space. And sir, it's been a pleasure talking to you, and I'm glad you took the time to do this.
Oh, no, it's over? Oh, I still got a little scotch left. All right, well. I'll give you some bonus footage for the Patreon you'll probably open up in a little bit.
A Patreon, I think, is definitely only because, I mean, Patreon is so brilliant. It actually amazes me that it's taken the creative space this long to establish a platform like this. And you know, going back to when I started podcasting back in like 2012, man, I would have killed for a platform like that that would allow people to support me financially without having to buy anything or having to launch a Kickstarter or, you know, anything like that. And, you know, Indiegogo and GoFundMe have their stigmas that people really aren't into. And so Patreon's really helped the creative space thrive while giving supporters an opportunity to give back to things that they enjoy.
Oh, yeah. And you know what's nice, too, is you can make your levels whatever you want. So for me, I'm sure you're probably the same way, but I don't like asking for stuff. I like, you know, I don't like saying, hey, can you do this for me? Can you? So Patreon's nice because for as little as a dollar, you could say, hey, you know what? You tip your cocktail waitress. If you like the show, join the Patreon. You'll get some behind the scenes stuff. And, it's almost like, you don't want to say a fan club, but it's kind of like a way for, you know, you could support each other in the same space. Where actually, I got to get to supporting some of the podcasts I listen to now that I'm thinking about it. Oh God, I feel guilty. Hang on, get the keyboard out too. Now that I have some scotches in me, I'll be donating all sorts of money around here.
on their next show, Mark's going to be like, "We got a PayPal donation from Cousin Vito. That's a very big number."
I fell asleep on the number button there. So
very well. Well, Cousin Vito, people can find you on Twitter at the same. Vito's Casino. There we go. Cousin Vito was I'm assuming was taken.
You know what? But that's some guy who barely even tweeted. It was like, hey, but you know, Vito's Casino works, I guess. Vito's Casino. Yeah. CousinVito@gmail.com. And my site right now is CousinVito'sCasino.com. But I actually purchased MakeLuckHappen.com. So we'll see. I got something in the works with that. We'll see. I don't know. You know, I don't know what I'm doing. So you're a seasoned podcaster. I'm just a gambler who found a microphone and plugged it in, and now look what happened.
I'll get into this on another episode, but I've probably launched probably close to 12 to 15 different podcasts. Maybe half of those actually went on to produce more than 3 episodes, but I've probably produced more than 500 podcast episodes in my career. Across a number of different topics. So, and what's funny is when you get into a new topic, it's all the same. It's another new space that you have to figure out. So, back to square one.
Right. Well, back to square one. Don't say 7. Don't celebrate on the don't pass. Drink as many free drinks as you can.
Yeah.
And don't buy any systems anyone's selling you about gambling, because almost all of them are tricks. that's my best advice for you.
Vito, one thing that I've learned about you is that you're apparently good friends with someone that I admire as well, Mr. Seneca. If you could go ahead and if you could wrap us up, I'd be honored if you'd wrap us up a little something that Seneca told you back in the day.
Oh, I love you. And you know, I grew up a little Italian boy. I was in the womb. I was in the cradle. I was in the little crib. And Roman philosopher Seneca, he always come over. He's friend of the family. And he always told me, he said, Vito, look at me. Listen to me. Luck is what happens when preparation meets opportunity. And, you know, in this interview, I think we kind of prepared people to explore the gambling niche here. I think we prepared people not to cheer on the don't pass line. And, hey, maybe we'll explore some pie gal poker together, because I'm loving it.
Big thanks to Vito for not only joining me for an interview, but being very supportive during my launch here. The website is very close to finish. It wasn't close enough where I felt confident to promote it, but very close to finish. I'm at The Better Life on Twitter. Again, if you are in the Maryland area and want to throw dice one of these days with me, want to get a little meetup, hit me up there. I hope everybody has a wonderful weekend. If you are at the casino, good luck. If not, enjoy your week. Timothy Lawson, good night. Good luck.
Man, I know. You going to play some Pie Gal Poker with me at the Gamapalooza?
Absolutely. I will play anything that doesn't have a silly house edge to it.
Well, you're going to have to stay away from the little proposition bets on the side there. You know,
I always stay away from those.
But it's so tempting. You know what the problem is?
Tempting.
Not to get on a tangent, but the problem with the side bets is you don't play them. And that, 90% of the time, you're always right. You know, you feel good. And then sometimes if you're at the table and somebody whacks one of those, especially if you just got there, then you start questioning and you say, oh,
yeah,
my God.
Here's my counter to that. Those people you're talking about don't walk away when they hit the big side bet. I've been at a table for 2 hours, and inside of 2 hours, someone sat down, played, hit a big bonus, played, left with no chips, right? And I was still sitting there playing my bankroll. So if people can make the case to me that when they hit it, they leave, then sure, I could get on board with that. But who wants to do that, right? Who wants to sit down and in hand two hit the bonus and be like, well, I don't want to lose this all back and leave? I would rather just grind out that low house edge and enjoy my time at the table.
And just to bring this back to what we were talking about with the Pie Gow before, when I was at the Pie Gow table in Atlantic City for Zork Fest with Eric and a bunch of Julian from Vegas Confessions, Epic Esquire, a bunch of people, we were all playing together. And I was asking because I need glasses a little bit, I'll be honest with you. So I couldn't see what the thing said. So I was like, Eric, what are the payouts on this? And he looks at me and he like whispers to me and he's like, it's a leak. It's just a leak. Don't bet it. It's only a leak. And so me, that's what I always think is I say, you know what? The casino's a leak in general. Why am I putting a leak on a leak? So I thank Eric for that. That's what I think now when I go to the table. It's just a leak.
There we go. There
it's
you
no
go.
Leaking. Oh, yeah. I wish I ended on a high note there. The just a leak line. That's
Don't
my
worry.
Finish. Oh yeah, that Vito. He's talking about the leak. He's the leak guy.
Don't worry. That's what editing's for. Right? Throw some things around that way.
Yeah, throw some music over that. They'll be like, I think he was saying a story or something, and then the music came on.